That's Jeremy Scahill on the next Alternative Radio, this Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. on your Kansas City community radio station, 90.1 FM, KKFI.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It is estimated to cost at least $1 trillion. That means we need to pony up. Even though the Cold War is over, we've got to give more money to the military. How do you get the American people ready to pony up? Well, in 2000, this group called the Project for the New American Century, that had Rumsfeld, Cheney, Pearl, Wolfowitz, all sorts of people, many of whom became central members of the Bush II administration, were members of this organization. They put out a document called Rebuilding America's Defenses. And in there they say we need to do this rapid transformation of the military, but it's going to go very slowly, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event such as the new Pearl Harbor. The evening of 9/11, evidently Bush wrote in his diary, "I think the new Pearl Harbor happened of the 21st century happened today." After 9/11, Rice, Cheney, Bush were all going around saying, "This 9/11 provides great opportunities for us." No mention of that, the word opportunity. You know, in the 9/11 report, there's an index. You go on internet and look up any word. Look up opportunities. You will not find opportunities in the mouth of any member of the administration. Iraq, no mention of the fact that this same group had been chomping at the bit to attack Iraq ever since Papa Bush wouldn't do it back in 91. They were very upset with him. In the report, no mention that we might have some interest in the oil. Now, Kerry, the other night, in my moment, the proudest moment, he said, "What happened when we went to Iraq? We ignored everything. Everything was chaos except the oil ministries. We protected the oil ministries." Furthermore, he said, "We're building 14 military bases." If you read Chalmers Johnson's book, that's what it's all about. Oil and bases are two sides of the same coin. That's what it's about. You would not get an inkling of that. We were just going over to take care of Saddam because he was a bad man. Okay, I'll have to draw this to an end. Let me just say that when my book comes out in 6 weeks, the second part of the book, which is dealing with the 9/11 report, defending the military, going through flight 11, 175, 77, and then 93. This is by far, every reader reads it and says, "This is the strongest part of the book," and I'm sorry I didn't get to it today, but then I want you to buy my book. But when you get to this part, you will say, part one is mild, compares with the lies in part two. Let me just give one example. The big question is, did we shoot down, did we, our own military, shoot down Flight 93? And many people have argued Cheney was down in the underground shelter masterminding this operation. What does the 9/11 report do? It tells you, well, Cheney didn't get down there till 10 o'clock. And then the flight was down at 10:03. No way he could have done it. And then he didn't give the shoot down order till 10:15. Norman Mineta, Secretary of Transportation, testified to the 9/11 Commission that he got to the White House about 9:15, checked in with Richard Clark. This corresponds exactly to Richard Clark, what he says in his book, Against All Enemies. Went down to the underground shelter, got there by 9:20. Cheney was already there, was clearly in charge. There was a guy coming in talking about this flight is 50 miles out. Does this order stand? This was probably whatever was coming towards the Pentagon. Which in the book they tell you, gee, we didn't know anything about it until two minutes ahead of time. And here we have it, almost 20 minutes ahead of time. And so they make up this story that Cheney didn't get taken down to the underground shelter and didn't actually get in there till 10 o'clock. So they lie by probably, Richard Clark's account suggests that Cheney went down about 9:12. So they lie by almost an hour there. And they tell you, well, this was in the logs, but the Secret Service says, well, those logs somehow got destroyed. We don't have that information, but you know, we can trust the Secret Service. So the biggest lies are in part two, particularly with regard, well, let me summarize. You've got three stories. You now have three stories about 9/11. The first few days after 9/11, Myers, NORAD, and others were saying, we didn't send up any flights until after the Pentagon was hit. Well, that wasn't going to wash. That looked like a stand down where you say, well, just let it happen. So then they start telling us, and CBS says on Tuesday night, oh no, they sent up flights, but they just didn't get there on time. And that became official then on September 18th. They came out with their timeline. They said, here's when the FAA told us, and here's when we scrambled airplanes. And unfortunately, they just couldn't get there in time. Now, then in the meantime, critics have looked at those timelines and said, you still could have made it. You could have stopped Flight 175. You certainly could have stopped Flight 77, assuming it was. And so we've got a third story here. They give us a new timeline which says we had 9 minutes notice for Flight 11, and that wasn't enough because it took 8 minutes for NEADS, NORAD in Northeast, to call Florida to get permission to send up planes, which is, you know, ridiculous. An 8-minute phone call when you've got a crisis. And then no warning whatsoever. So they tell you that what we've been told since September 18th is all false. When September 18th, NORAD's timeline said we got a notification of Flight 175 at 8:43, the 9/11 Commission says, no, that was a mistake. They didn't know about it until the South Tower was hit. And then Flight 77, they said, well, we got notification at 9:24. No. No notification. We only heard about it 2 minutes ahead of time. Just in time to send up a guy and look at it and say, yeah, that's a Boeing 757, all right, just before it crashed. And then with Flight 93, no warning whatsoever. So just a complete rewriting of history. And revisionism is fine, but you've got to show why the old story was false and why the new story is more credible. They don't do that. They just say, that was incorrect. That was incorrect. Here's the truth, and then you look at the notes. It looks very scholarly because they've got all these books and the notes in the back, but you look at the crucial ones, and it says, interview with General Myers. Interview with General Everhart. Interview with the Secret Service. Interview with the FBI agents. I hate to tell you this, but this is the sad story of truth and politics in Washington in these here days. Thank you very much.
When did Kansas City get a prospect, Max? Why is the bus fleet changing to compressed natural gas, and what are the environmental implications? Have you heard about the new Regional Transit Coordinating Council? Tune in to Radioactive Magazine Tuesday at 6 p.m. as Janet Rogers with Transit Action Network interviews Mark Huffer, the general manager of KCATA, and Dick Jared, director of systems development. That's Radioactive Magazine, Tuesday at 6 p.m.
No more. side devours from the inside out. No more talk about the old days. It's time for something great. Want you to get.
Oh yes, Adams for Peace, right here on Community Radio in the 21st Century. I am Benjamin, your host of the program known as Paragon Radio, which airs here on KKFI every Sunday night, Monday morning from midnight until question marks. We've done it for a long time, and we continue on doing it this evening. And for some reason, I got down here and I was inspired to play some 9/11 truth information. I guess is what that would be. And that was David Ray Griffin, who's a, I believe he's a professor of divinity at a Southern Californian university. He's also an author, did several books, including the new Pearl Harbor, etc., which is, I think, essentially what that talk was in reference to, and that in his lecture on the 9/11 Commission report. And I played that one out there as a throwback for all you people that remember when the truth and justice was important still for us here in America, before we all got Facebook pages and decided to devote ourselves to more puerile interests. I mean, who needs a Facebook page anymore? There's a website called Pornstagram, right? There's a website called Pornstagram. Instagram is a way to share pictures like they're a blog. Pornstagram is a way to share pictures of your girlfriend and her friends, or just you. If you're one of those lonely guys who thinks that somebody really wants to see a picture of that, you can upload that as well. So, I mean, who needs truth or justice or the American way when you can look at amateur still pornographic images uploaded constantly to your computer screen? That's why Jesse just went and got his computer. That's why he's going to be loading up his laptop shortly. You got to turn, your mic's not even on. Sit down, get situated. You guys always want to play with in touch with the mics. So I just, exactly. Sit down, relax, take some deep breaths, get situated. I don't advocate anyone actually looking at pornographic images on their computer. There's something much more productive, I'm sure you can find, to do with your time. But, so, David Ray Griffin, 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, an old school little piece of 9/11 truth for you. And I don't play it necessarily as a throwback for the people that lived it, but there are kids who are listening to the radio right now. Kids, I mean, people that are like, you know, 18, younger, a little bit older, that kind of thing, who need to understand the world is not the way it was taught to you in high school, all that stuff you did not pay attention to in your history class. That is not the way the world is. The world is not the way it is broadcast to you via social media, whatever other types of news you ingest. I mean, I guess I take that back. The children of today do have The Daily Show. So, because comedy is an exercise in the theater of the absurd, maybe Jon Stewart has done more than anyone else since Edward R. Murrow to allow people to understand the perverse and disturbed nature of our society and news and various other aspects of current affairs and the political establishment.
I've heard millennials say, I get my news from Comedy Central and I get my comedy from Fox News.
What's a millennial?
It's the kids that were, that you're referring to.
Who is that?
Kids that were toddlers when we were teenagers.
Is that what a millennial is?
Approximately. Born after Y2K?
Yeah. Or no.
Born
or,
after Y2K?
No, not 14? Born after Y2K. Graduated high school after Y2K.
Yeah, Y2K. Nobody remembers what that is either. What a joke. I remember listening to the news. We were on the road for January, for New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, 2000, 1999. We were on the road. I remember listening to the news and them giving updates of computers on Pacific islands that had already gone through the date change because of the nature of the time zones and the international dateline. And they'd be on, you know, some little miniature island somewhere in the Pacific where it was already 2000. It was already Y2K. And they're like, yep, looks like the computer's running just fine, Jim. We'll check back with you when we go to the next time zone, see if there's any changes. Yeah, Y2K. I still have water buried in my backyard from Y2K. Dig that up one of these days. Water, canned goods. And then, of course, you know, you had the poor man's Y2K, which was 2012, which nobody really got as hyped up for. You're kind of expecting it was a little bit looser. You didn't really know what was going to happen, if the world was going to actually end, Mayan apocalypse, that kind of thing. But clearly the world did end. And we are living in the remnants of that ended world. That's what this is right now. But for the children out there, millennials, if Jesse wants to call them that, you sound like you read Time Magazine or something like that when you use terms like that. Do you read Time Magazine?
It gets delivered to my house.
Oh, it's so, right. Do you read it for the advertisements or?
I store them in my restroom, if you know what I mean.
Oh, you like the perfume inserts. Is that what it's about? Little perfume magazines come with little per. Did Time Magazine have those? I don't even know.
No, they don't.
You really sound like you read Time Magazine when you use terms like millennials and whatnot.
No, that's a standard term.
A standard term.
It's like
in regards to what?
Referring to the youth of America today, and not even just America, just the youth of today. They're millennials. I mean, if you have a better name for it, I'm down. But I just don't know. I haven't heard another term.
The kids, the childrens. The future, right?
Millennials are generally kids who can't tell their parents they're going to this place and then go to this place because their parents track them on
you
their cell
flash
phones.
You mean flash mobbers?
Exactly.
Yeah, the flash mobbers. Yeah, parents track them on their cell phones. You got to assume that half the parents use that to act like the Stasi or the KGB towards their kids, and the other half of parents just like, after tracking them for a little while, like, it'd be so much easier if I just didn't know where they were. I don't really need to see this, do I?
No.
You got to figure those kids. I mean, all the kids that I knew that had parents that forced them into compliance and made them do all kinds of stuff they didn't want to do ended up acting out a little bit, having some issues once they were no longer at mommy's house. You got to treat your children like adults to the point at which they will have mutual respect for you and maturity, as opposed to being a bunch of flash mobbed trash culture, you know, incipient little beasts. But all you millennials out there don't necessarily have to be that. But the point is, what I'm trying to say here fundamentally is that this information we just listened to, 9/11, the history of America, the current state and status of things, the way they are now, it's important to understand that there is an alternative to the mainstream. There is a different perspective that can be had, and it's not really that hard to find. I mean, I guess that's no question about that with so much information available to everybody all the time. But finding something, a conversation like this, because it's not just about kind of that InfoWars mentality, you know, where you're quick to blame it on big government or shape-shifting alien reptiles or Jewish people or whatever it is. Not that Alex Jones does that, but there's other prominent websites that are very similar to InfoWars, namely What Really Happened, that just sink their teeth right in. I mean, we're talking about you, Michael Rivera. I think Michael Rivera is probably a decent, you know, guy or whatever. I don't think he's a bad guy, but it's just he's so overwhelmed with hatred for Israel that it kind of skews everything else that he does and puts him in a little box. And that little box is the Jew-hating box.
Do you remember that? Do either of you gentlemen remember that website from about 10 years ago and before? I discovered it in 2003 and spent about half a year on this website. But do you remember IlluminatiArchives.com?
I do not remember IlluminatiArchives.com.
That's where I first read about the shape-shifting reptile.
Shape-shifting alien reptiles. That was such a fun topic to be had. I mean, weren't they supposed to, wasn't there some sort of gravitational force field that was preventing the reptiles from leaving the Earth?
And that you're thinking force about field, the Greys.
That force field was supposed to be lifted somewhere around 2012, and then there was going to be an intergalactic war, right? Something along those lines?
Well, David Icke says that the
Jake, nothing? Nothing from you, Jake?
Most of the extraterrestrials working on Earth today are actually a rebel force. There's not as many of the Imperials, so they say.
Yes, allegedly they're trapped here.
But Isn't the force field supposed to be done now? Are they supposed to be able to go?
Approximately.
Aren't all bets off at this point? 2012 was 2 years ago. I mean, where... Come on, seriously. Where are the aliens, exactly?
They're around. They shapeshift.
They're across the street from Home Depot looking for work this morning.
You remember that guy that wrote that book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman? John Perkins. Do you know that his next book was called Shapeshifter? I don't know if you've ever looked into that book, but the guy that wrote Confessions of an Economic
Hitman. Have you read that book, Shapeshifter?
Both of them, yes, I have.
What's Shapeshifter about?
It's about this tribe in Africa that he lived with for a year that apparently can shift their shape and make themselves appear to be something they're not. Which, if I read stuff like that on David Icke's website, I'll be like, it's interesting. But when a guy writes a book like Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and then his very next book is Shapeshifter, that's, I'm like, huh, that's interesting.
Yeah, but who needs shapeshifting anymore? Didn't Michael Jackson performed last night?
Did that happen?
Yeah, no, he did. At the Billboard Music Awards. Which is apparently a big deal to somebody. People in the music industry. I don't know. But if you can have Michael... didn't Tupac Shakur perform at Coachella a couple years ago?
Kurt Cobain's coming to a town near you.
That's so disgusting. So disgusting. They should just have the whole band. If they're going to do Nirvana as holograms, or Kurt as holograms, they do not. They just need the whole band from the early 90s. Nobody wants an old Chris Novoselic, and
I do.
Nobody wants an old Dave Grohl. Except for you, apparently. Wouldn't it be better if they were all holograms and they just played it off the MP3?
I mean, no.
But you see what my point here is, that why do you need to be able to shapeshift if we have holograms, and what's the angle now?
I mean, there's a whole world of stuff you could do. If you're
like switch people's license plates.
Like if yeah, like switch people's license
yeah,
plates.
Yeah, switch people's license plates, yeah.
That's you could start something with something as little as that, and you could move on up to murdering a politician and then going to work as that person the next day, or murdering the CEO of a company and then going to work as him the next day, murdering a defense contractor and going to work as him the next day, or
but that's about it.
Putin might have been murdered years ago. Putin might be a shapeshifter for all we know. I'm just saying. There's many things you could do with the art of shapeshifting.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm hardly convinced.
So do you gentlemen remember those shirts from about, I don't know, maybe 10 years or less, but everybody was wearing them that said, Jesus is my homeboy, and had Jesus going like this? Remember those shirts?
What was Jesus going like? Can you show us again?
Like this.
Okay, for all the people at home.
Should I do it again? Webcam. But they have these shirts now that say, David Icke is my homeboy, and it has David Icke going like this.
I don't remember those shirts, the Jesus shirts.
They were really big.
The Buddy Jesus? He's doing a thumbs up. And David Icke is—he is your homeboy. You're a big David Icke guy.
He's funny. He's much, much more interesting to listen to than Alex Jones.
All depends on whether or not you like your British accent or Little Texas. I can't even remember the last time I heard Alex Jones even speak. Oh, look at that. We're getting a text in.
Wowee-wa.
Yeah, hell no. You need to read your book again, according to this person. Jesse, you lived in... the text just went away. There it is.
About John Perkins? It
says, hell no, John Perkins lived in Ecuador, South America, not Africa.
Okay, same thing. They used to be one continent.
Really? Okay, same thing.
They used to be one continent.
And now, okay.
It's late.
Real American over here.
That book came out in like 2006. So it's an old book.
2006 makes it an old book, huh? There's older books out there, no question. So, so it was nice to start off a little 9/11 truth, and I do it for the children. not the flash mobs out there, but for the kids that are maybe starting to realize that there's, you know, something else to this whole thing, and maybe there's something a little more important, you know, to the world we live in than what we are told over and over repeatedly and coerced to buy, because that's really what it is. It's all about marketing something to you, a lifestyle, a mentality, whatever it is. And it gets marketed to you heavily. I mean, let's just forget, in the wake of September 11, 2001, when everyone in America was trying to figure out what they should do to support, I don't know, the troops or the Constitution or something, George Bush told us, President George Bush, George W. Bush told us, that we should be very afraid, but we should still go to the shopping malls and run up money on our credit cards, and we still needed to go to Disney World and spend, you know, 4 days and three nights at Epcot Center. Very important to keep the economy fully stimulated. Fully stimulated. All right, 816-931-5534 is the telephone number. You can also text in at the non-corporately sponsored Paragon Radio text line at 816-301-5731. There's no guarantee, however, that I will read the entirety of your message on air. Some people have really called me out for not reading a endless diatribe of hatred towards Russ on air. I mean, we don't need to. Russ doesn't need that. Russ is a sensitive guy. I mean, sure, he likes to get beat up a little bit. I mean, what government bureaucrat doesn't? But we don't need to go into depth as to all the reasons why Russ is who he is. I was on Huffington Post tonight, speaking of Russ, and I just got to wondering why am I here? What am I seeking to gain from being on the Huffington Post?
A glimpse into Russ's mind?
Is that what, I mean, you would have to troll the message boards of Huffington Post if I really wanted to glimpse into his mind. But it's like the Huffington Post is a strange blend of regular news website, the Drudge Report for liberals, and like one of those British tabloids that has all the sensational stories, and then on like the third page it's a bunch of naked girls. Are you familiar with those?
Naked girls?
No, British newspapers.
Correct.
That feature naked ladies. And it's just, there's not a lot there. And then for some reason I ended up watching a YouTube clip of Bill Maher interviewing Benjamin Netanyahu. Bill Maher is a very big fan of Benjamin Netanyahu for whatever reason. Oh, I know why I was watching that. It started, there was Russia Today played a clip of the guys that do the rap news. Have you ever seen that?
Shlomo or
something like that. And they had done one that was 8 minutes long that was in regards to the Middle East peace process or process peace or something like that. It's about as real as processed cheese, what's going on over there. There was another roadblock to Middle Eastern peace this last week, I guess. And by roadblock, I think it was a Israeli checkpoint. I think that's what they mean by another roadblock to the Middle Eastern peace process. It was a lot of barbed wire and American-made military equipment on the outskirts of a Israeli settlement somewhere in the West Bank of the Gaza Strip. Because, you know what? They're never going to figure things out over there. I think it's literally going to require God to come back and have him smite some people. Who'll get smited this time?
In the Middle East specifically?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of smiting going on, just in general. I mean, they smite everybody over there. They smite rape victims in the Middle East. Bury them up to their necks and throw rocks at their face.
Well, if it was a just God, he would start with Saudi Arabia.
Start with, you think the Saudis are the worst?
Well, they've escaped the well, say what they may or may not deserve. They've gotten away with a ton of nefarious activities for far too long. I'm still not convinced they're Middle Easterns. They look like horrible Anglos with bad costumes on.
Yeah, the Saudis wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for the United States of America giving them a protected status. It's pretty impressive what they have done to the holy sites, because that's what Saudi Arabia is. They are the king of Saudi Arabia. He is the guardian of the holiest sites of Islam, Mecca and Medina. And Mecca is the place where all Muslims are supposed to go for a pilgrimage, if capable, at some point in their life. And there's a big stone in the middle of this area called the Kaaba that people, and it's supposedly goes back to Abraham or something like that. I'm hardly a religious scholar, but right next to this great monument of Islam, which all Muslims are supposed to go to at some point in their life, is a large hotel shopping mall complex that is literally the largest building in the Middle East or something along those lines. And it's kind of, it's very Johnson County of them to have constructed this massive altar to consumerism.
You're talking about the building in Dubai?
No, Dubai is a different country. We're talking about Saudi Arabia.
The biggest the tallest building in the world is in Dubai, isn't it?
And it's like one of the, I'm right. We say this is a massive building in the middle of the desert next to a stone that was placed there by Abraham 5,000 years ago or something like that. I mean, it's just,
gotcha.
It's a little impressive. Now, you're probably right about the tallest skyscraper or whatever.
That's
is in Dubai.
Biggest building right. in the Middle East.
But this hotel complex that's right next to Mecca is pretty impressive. And I'm pretty sure that in itself has probably garnered the hatred of many Muslims towards the Saudis throughout the entirety of the Middle East. But things are not to be solved over there. I don't think there's any question about that. There was an interesting study that I read doing show prep for the show this evening in regards to warfare. 1 out of 10 deaths during war is a combatant. 90% of all deaths in wars are civilians. The proportion of civilian death and the methods for classifying deaths as civilian are debated, but civilian war deaths constitute 85 to 90% of casualties caused by war. A top defense of war is that it must be used to prevent something worse, called genocide. Not only does militarism generate genocide rather than prevent it, but the distinction between war and genocide is a very fine one at best, which is a very good point. I mean, there's no question about this. Since the end of World War II, there have been 248 armed conflicts in 153 locations around the world. The United States launched 201 overseas military operations between the end of World War II and 2001. And since then, others, of course, the U.S. military spending, of course, we all know this, dwarfs the rest of the world. One in 10 deaths in war are from actual combatants. 90%+ of the people that die in every single war are just civilians. Now that when that study says that there's a fine line, if war is meant to prevent something worse than conflict, which is genocide, which is the destruction of entire peoples, where's the line and how fine is that line? The person says that it's very, very fine. I mean, it would seem as though that if it weren't for all the conflict that has raged, I mean, we're already to a point of unsustainability. I mean, if it wasn't for all the war and abortions, I mean, wouldn't we be a little overpopulated right now? Let's thank God for war and abortion. Just think about how many more mouths there would be to feed out there. You know what I mean? If it wasn't for all that warfare and abortion. You vegetarians see that meat prices have been surging the most in 11 years. Of course, some people are saying, and I was thinking about this, pretty amazing how much food has gone up in just the last 5 or 6 years. You used to be able to find organic apples for 99 cents a pound. Like, just simple, red apples. Just red, delicious, organic apples. Not big ones. Little medium-sized ones for 99 cents a pound. You could find those. Now you can't find organic apples, you know, for anything less than $1.99 a pound. I mean, almost doubled in price. And sometimes that's a really good deal if you can find them for $1.99 a pound. You used to be able to get local eggs. You get a dozen local eggs that were organic, etc., for like $2.50, $3. Now, these local farms can charge $4.50 for 12 eggs. It's pretty amazing how these prices have gone up. And they're going to continue to go up. And all that's going to happen is people are going to start demanding, because in America we have very inexpensive food. People are going to start demanding that the food become cheap again. And clearly us having inexpensive food has led to all kinds of processed and disgusting and chemically laden and artificially preserved and laboratory created flavors and textures and all these other things. Processed food that's led to us, you know, so much cancer and disease. And what we're going to have, if food prices keep going up, people are going to start demanding for cheap food, and Monsanto will go, well, we have a solution. Like, clearly, you just need to eat more genetically modified organisms. They're affordable, healthy, and there's no evidence to support in any way whatsoever that they're bad for you at all. So go ahead and insert a goat gene into your corn or whatever it is and enjoy your dinner. 816-931-5534 is the telephone number to speak live with the on-air studio here on the Paragon Radio program, or you can text 301-5731, 816-301-5731. You can also email paragonradio@gmail.com. Good morning, you're on the radio.
Oh, this is Russ checking in.
Good morning, Russ.
I heard you talking about the Huffington Post.
Do you want me to read some of the hateful text messages I get just about you as a person, or do you want me to have those sent to you?
Well, that's fine. You know, some people just can't stand to hear the truth.
Do you like the abuse, or?
What's that?
Do you like the abuse, Russ, or?
Oh, it's fine.
Do you have feelings like other people?
I've been abused quite readily online, so.
So you kind of like it a little bit.
Well, you know, people. It seems to me that a lot of people, you know, are super hypocrites, and when you point that out, they don't like it. You know, if you point out that Robert Rice is very wealthy, you're kicked off the Huffington Post.
Well, I mean, so what's the real problem with Robert Rice, except for the fact that he's a communist?
Well, because of his unrelenting critique or slamming of wealthy people when he's wealthy himself, when the house he lives in is way bigger than the house I'm living in. It's just the hypocrisy, you know, whether it's him or anyone else that has a public forum.
I mean, is he a billionaire? Or?
Well, he's not a billionaire, right, but he's worth several million.
Yeah, several million is just kind of, I mean, you know, for people.
Plus, he was an architect. He was one of the architects for the NAFTA.
Well, let's be realistic, though. Several million dollars, you know, if you're Robert Reich, who's, you know, he's in his 60s probably. I mean, that's just somebody that's had a, you know, well-planned life. I mean, somebody with several million dollars is not going to consider themselves to be
wealthy.
Well,
that puts him in the 1%.
It does? Having several, I mean, if, let's say if you have several million dollars, including your, all your assets, your home and your, you know, your, your 401k or whatever money you put away for retirement. That puts you in the 1%, having several million dollars worth of assets?
Well, 1%, if you make over $250,000 a year, you're in the 1%.
Is that right?
Yep.
Not even close.
What do you mean it's not even close? Look it up. You guys have Google. Look it up.
Yeah, we have Google. The 1% are, you know, like the Chris Rock joke, Shaq's rich. There's one guy that pays Shaq and everybody on the team. That guy's wealthy. Shaq's not in the 1%. Well, he may be with all of his accumulated assets since, but $250,000 is what they tried to paint you as upper class for, you know, taxing and healthcare purposes, but you're not anywhere. You couldn't even scrape the barnacles off the 1% yacht at $250,000.
Well, maybe the point is that when we talk about the 1%, and maybe Russ is accurate when he says $250,000 is per year makes you the 1%. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but really, I mean, if you want to make moves, if you want to have a wake, you know, behind your powerboat through the political landscape, you have to be like the Koch brothers and have, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars that you're willing to invest, right? I mean, if you really want to make moves, you got to be able to put down some real cash, some, you know,
isn't that the way it's always been, though?
Oh, I think it's accelerated pretty dramatically. I think the Koch brothers have really kind of, you know, I mean, they made the game a much higher stakes game. I mean, certainly politics has operated on you know, cash money and brown paper sacks, you know, since the beginning of, you know, elected office. I mean, their idea of being able to get things done in the dark of night with large, you know, bags of money has always been the case. But now we're talking about stakes. I mean, we're just talking, you know, dwarfing what it used to be. I mean, now that political campaigns for president, you know, are billion-dollar campaigns, and people are spending, you know, $50 million in, you know, Senate races.
Well, yeah, I guess that begs the question: how would you have public financing?
How would you?
I mean,
have
how
it?
Would you? I mean, how would you have it without having, you know, 500 people saying they want to run for the presidency?
Well, no, that's, and I mean, there's truth to that, and I think that you would have to have a way to poll, but, and based upon the polls would be the way it works as far as the financing is concerned, and I think that's how it is now. You can be publicly financed when you run for president. You don't have to be, but to get money, you have to poll a certain amount, and I don't know if it's 5% or it's less than that. I think it's somewhere in that. You need to do that. But what really should happen in regards to the, you know, political campaigns is that you should not be able to pay for political advertising. I disagree heavily with the Supreme Court in regards to this. I think that political advertising should not be advertising at all. It should be information gathering for, you know, a well-informed voting bloc to be able to make an accurate and informed decision. It should not be something that's, you know, this message was, you know, brought to you by so-and-so, as I rail and make a bunch of kind of baseless accusations that are going to alienate people that might, you know, respond to simple little jabs like that.
Well, should reporters that write opinion pieces also be blocked?
No,
I mean, they reach way beyond themselves.
No, I'm saying that there's, you know, the Kansas City Star and the local TV stations and the national news media should have a requirement to give the political candidates who are running for office an opportunity to put their information, their message out there, and it not be in a commercial format. It be done so in an informational format. And I think they used to do that. I think that used
to... Well, the public station still tries to do that.
Sure, sure.
No, and to at least an extent.
I just think there should be a responsibility of the media to inform, because doesn't the FCC charter, you know, if you go back to the 30s when they, you know, developed the Federal Communications Commission to regulate, you know, radio stations, that it was the people's airwaves and they're for educational purposes. Obviously, this has changed over time as things do, but nevertheless, it's unfair for, I think, this money that has driven politics to then be recycled back into the media to create a self-serving situation where it's, you know, when Ron Paul was running for president in 2008, nobody took him seriously until he raised $1 million in a day. And they're like, oh, wait a minute, he's going to be paying for advertising. We better get him on, you know, some interviews. We better start taking him seriously because he's going to be paying, you know, these stations and these affiliates money to have his
Well, obviously we're not going to be solving this problem in 5 minutes.
Well, no, that's not going to happen.
No, but I do think it's, well, juxtaposing that against the what's happening in Ukraine. You know, the elections are going to be soon here on the 25th.
I mean, what is going to happen with the Ukraine? It looks like the Ukraine is just going to devolve into more and more violence. I mean, you just have good old-fashioned thuggery taking place, and it would seem like at some point there's going to be some sort of pooch, right? Is it going to be?
Well, you know, it's funny because as people know, well, as some people know, my wife's from Ukraine, and she listens to, of course, Russian news shows all the time vis-a-vis the internet, and Indonesia. One of the cities that has declared its independence, the main spokesman was begging people in the city to join their ad hoc military, and they weren't getting any volunteers. And he said, well, if we don't get any male volunteers, we're going to open it up to women, which I thought was, you know, kind of funny. I mean, it's like I'm sure that a small band of well-armed people could take over City Hall downtown in Kansas City and maybe declare it an independent nation. But at some point, people are going to go, you know, I want my cable. You know, my power's not working. My ATM machine's not working.
Right.
It's just kind of an interesting thing what's going on there. I mean, I don't know. The self-proclaimed leader of Donetsk said that they weren't going to allow any voting in their newly independent city on the 25th. So I don't know. It also seems like Putin is just standing by. You know, maybe the sanctions are beginning to hurt a little bit.
The sanctions that targeted his friends?
Well, yeah, his friends. But, you know, there's also now there's talk about the Russians cutting off supplies of rocket engines for the the U.S. military has been buying rocket engines from the Russians to launch satellites, and they're also talking about ending the
International Space Station. Right.
Yeah, the International Space Station. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't know. Just seems like it's in a slow motion. The economy in Ukraine has also been falling quite rapidly.
Well, that's how this all begins. Right, that's how all this unrest began, is economic issues in the Ukraine.
You're talking about the economic hitman. That's what the U.S. was doing in Central and Southern South America, destabilizing economy.
But that's always the story. And you look at a situation like is in Ukraine right now, and it just seems like it's quite ripe for, you know, a little tyranny to come in and promise to straighten things out.
Well, right. And
is that going to be the I mean, so then, you know, the United States alleges that would be Russian tyranny. Vladimir Putin himself personally, and, you know, the Russians are alleging that it's, you know, American-backed Ukrainian thugs or something, right? Fascists, neo-Nazis.
Well, it's interesting being married to somebody from a former Eastern Bloc country because, you know, my wife is telling me that she grew up on propaganda about how horrible the United States was and, you know, how we wanted to conquer the world and all these various things. Then I told her that we grew up on overinflated opinions of the Russian military, you know, the Soviet military, et cetera, et cetera. So both sides are playing a propaganda war.
No doubt. All it seems is that Putin is doing a little bit better job than the United States.
Because, well, it seems that way. So, anyways, I'm going to go back to losing you guys to mail.
All right, take care, Russ. It would seem to me as though the Americans are not doing as well as Putin. Because, you know, Russia, you just get kind of this unified front. Whatever Putin says goes.
According to people who actually file taxes, the top 1% starts at $368,000 per year. When you get to the top 0.5%, the average income there is $878,000 a year. The top 0.1%, the average income is $3.2 million a year. And the top 0.01%, the average income is $27 million a year.
You're really rich when you stop calling it income and you start calling it capital gains.
Correct.
You know, when it's...
And I think the really rich don't file income taxes. Or if they do, it's, you know, funny.
816-931-5534. 931-KKFI, you're on the radio. You're on the radio. All right. You're listening to your radio in the background and not on this one. Try that again in just a moment. Good morning.
Yeah, boys, it's Andrew Jackson.
All right, Andrew Jackson, turn your radio down. Not going to work if you're listening to the radio in the background.
Yeah, boys. What's going on, fellas?
I don't. You got that seven-second delay figured out. That's good. Good morning, Andrew.
No, I didn't think it was me, so I had the radio on. I thought you had somebody else lined up.
No, it's you, Fester. It's you.
Ah, I'm calling you on my new high-tech crack phone.
Crack phone? It's gonna.
Yeah. Then I traded up to an almost smartphone, but not quite.
So you're just gonna get halfway to cancer.
I tell you, man, I'm lucky just to figure out how to turn the damn thing on and off. But yeah, I guess I gotta figure out how to text now. That's gonna be my next trick. But
no, you gotta figure out how to sext. You have to send pictures of your genitalia to your girlfriends.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right.
Probably wouldn't be too impressive at this point, you know, seeing as how I just hit my 54th birthday. I don't think I'll be taking pictures of any of that anytime soon.
That's
hey, guys, you know, the thing, you know, as far as Alex Jones is concerned, you know, I like Alex Jones a lot. And you know, he's one of those guys that's interesting because I can only take him for about an hour because, you know, he's so over the top. He just, you know, after about an hour, he just wears me out. But, you know, the guy is a pioneer. I mean, he is kind of the father of, well, not that kind of, he is really the father of the alternative media movement, you know, and it's, I got a lot of respect for the guy because he's a pioneer in the sense that, you know, he's like the hell of it. I'm going to go do this, and it might get me killed, and I'm going to go do it, but, you know, somebody's going to do it, and, you know, it might as well be, and he wasn't following somebody else, you know, he was just kind of the tip of the spear and went out and did it and built a little media empire in the process, so... Yeah, he's over the top, and yeah, he's there's a lot of hyperbole with him, but I got a lot of respect for the man. He's got big balls, you know, to do what he does, you know, get out there with a megaphone and, you know, confront cops and confront the Federal Reserve and,
I mean, it is kind of amazing.
Confront the Bilderbergers. I mean, there's just not many people that are willing or able to do that.
But with all that Alex Jones has said, it is amazing that he is not dead.
Well, I don't think they want to martyr him. You know, because, you know, if they kill Alex Jones, I mean, you want to talk about waking up the Patriot movement. I mean, you know, I'm not sure they want to do that.
Well, I mean, that would beg the question, how big is that Patriot movement?
I think it's pretty good size. Well, let's take this as a theoretical. Let's say, you know, I don't know how many gun owners there are, but let's say, these are always the numbers I use. Let's say, you want to talk about gun owners that might actively, you know, resist a tyrannical government takeover or something. You know, let's say it's 2-3% of the country. There's what, 330 million here. You know, I think conservatively, you're probably looking at somewhere between 12 and 18 million people. That's a lot of people.
12 to 18 million people that would be.
That would pick up guns and actively, like let's say they try to do a gun confiscation. Said, okay, everybody turn your guns. I think you would probably get somewhere in the range of 12 to 18 million people that would actively resist that.
I
think that's a reasonable number. What do you think?
How many people resisted gun confiscation in the wake of Hurricane Katrina? I mean, none that I'm aware of.
Probably,